Bonjour. Hello again. My name is Fadela Shaib. I am a WHO spokesperson. Hello and welcome to this World Health Organization press conference. We are holding this press conference to share with you the result of the International Health Regulation Emergency Committee on Ebola virus disease, and we will also hear from DG about the upcoming World Health Assembly. We will have three speakers today, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who is the Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Robert Stephan, who is the Chair of the Emergency Committee, welcome, Doctor, and we will have also Dr. Peter Salama, who is Deputy Director General, Emergency Preparedness and Response at WHO. We will begin by a statement by Dr. Tedros, and then by the Chair, and we will take your questions. Dr. Tedros, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Fadila. I don't know, all of these journalists are your friends, so I didn't expect that you would introduce yourself.
For journalists who are outside.
Yeah, okay. For those who don't see you. First of all, it's nice to be here again. We had an appointment, as you remember. We said we should meet pre-WHA. So that's why we have this press conference today. But, you know, new situations also evolve and emerge. And that's why we came with Professor Stefano and Dr. Peter Salama, because we have an evolving situation, which is the Ebola in DRC. So I will give you some highlights, maybe some opening remarks, starting from our anniversary, 70th anniversary, and then the assembly. And then I will give the floor to Dr. Stefano and Dr. Salama to also have their remarks. As you know, this year is 70th anniversary of the World Health Organization. If you like, you can call it WHO's 70th birthday. And it's an opportunity to celebrate, because WHO's achievements, you know them, and big in the last 70 years. But the achievements, not only to celebrate the past, but also to plan the future. And since 1948, as I said earlier, lots of achievements. For instance, seen 25 years added to global life expectancy. Life expectancy has improved significantly and saved millions of children's lives in 2016. 6 million more children live to celebrate their fifth birthday than 1990. And eradicated smallpox. By the way, 8 May, that was when we actually announced the outbreak of Ebola in DRC, and that was the 38th anniversary of the eradication of smallpox, which was last Tuesday, which was a very unexpected coincidence, actually. And as you know, we're already nearly eradicating polio. Of course, there are still some fringe areas, especially Afghanistan and Pakistan. But polio is really being eradicated, and that could be one of the successes. Of course, WHO cannot claim this alone. It's the outcome of all the partners, and we would like to thank all our partners for this achievement. But despite these achievements, still there are many, many challenges. And as you know, I don't think this will be news to you, half of the population of the world still do not have access to basic health services. And that's very tragic. And second, we have 100 million people every year who get into poverty because of out-of-pocket payment. This is again another unacceptable situation. And you know, 13 million people die every year before the age of 70 from non-communicable diseases. NCDs, be it in high income, middle income, or low income countries, they're becoming serious problems. And as you know also, almost one in four women of reproductive age cannot access modern contraceptive methods. That's 208 million women, or 23% of those we target. And if you take all this, it shows that the world is really lagging behind in its efforts to achieve health and well-being for all by 2030. Of course, WHO has set a clear mission: promoting health, keeping the world safe, and serving the vulnerable. But to get back on track, WHO has set a goal of saving 29 million more lives by 2023. This means hitting our new triple billion targets. That's 1 billion more people benefiting from universal health coverage, 1 billion more people better protected from health emergencies, and 1 billion more people enjoying better health and well-being. Triple billion by 2023. Unless we do this, we will not be on track to achieve SDGs. And to prepare us to do this, over the past year, we have worked, one, to mobilize political momentum, because political intervention is surgical intervention for universal health coverage, and at the G7, at the G20, at the UN General Assembly, and also I wrote to all heads of states to renew their commitment on universal health coverage, because if half of the population of the world doesn't have access to services, I think the most important advocacy should be to bring the attention of the heads of states and government to this serious problem. And the other is strengthening emergency preparedness and response. And as you know, we have responded to 50 emergencies this year: Syria, Yemen, Cox Bazar, Madagascar, Nigeria. The list is very long. We will talk about the most recent Ebola, of course, very shortly. And we have established an independent high-level commission on NCDs, which is chaired by President Tavares of Uruguay, and also Dr. Sania Nishtar, and co-chaired by Finland, Russia, Sri Lanka, and Uruguay. We launched trans fat elimination by 2023. And we're working with the Global Fund, Stop TB, and civil society to find the 4 million missing TB cases. We have launched a new initiative to address the health effects of climate change in small islands and developing states in the past 10 and a half months. And to make all this happen, we have fast-tracked development of the new general program of work, which is the strategic plan, in consultation with countries and partners, and developed a transformation plan to make WHO more agile, countries at the center, working closely with regional offices, and focus on improving diversity and achieving gender parity. We also designed a new investment case we will be sharing with you shortly. But not last but not least, we have already formed a new management team, women who outnumbering men, and also with geographic diversity of all six regions for the first time in WHO. Then, having said this, the next thing I would like to say is the focus of the next assembly. One, of course, we would like to have the endorsement of the strategic plan, the 5 years. We have already fast-tracked it. It was supposed to be endorsed May 2019, a year from now. But without a direction, without a strategic plan, we cannot do the transformation plan, we cannot do the investment case. It was a precondition, and we had to do it ahead of schedule, and that's what we expect to be endorsed at the assembly, and the most important document, actually. And the other is the public health preparedness and response. There is an action plan. Pete can say more on that, but that will organize us more and to respond to emergencies as swiftly as possible at global, regional, and country levels. And the other important document will be the polio transition and post-certification. As I said earlier, we're moving into eradication, except a couple of countries now. So that will be one of the important discussions we will have during the assembly. Then, of course, we have preparation for the high-level meeting of General Assembly on the prevention of non-communicable diseases, and preparation for high-level meeting of the General Assembly to ending tuberculosis. So, of course, we have a long list of agenda items for the assembly, but these are the most important ones which I would like to share with you. Then I will move to the third agenda item, which is the situation of Ebola in DRC. Of course, Professor Stefano and Dr. Salama will say more on this, but I will give you some highlights because we have been to the epicenter of the outbreak last weekend. We have visited Kinshasa and then Bandaka, one of the major cities which has now one confirmed case, and also Bikoro, which is about 128 kilometers from Bandaka, which is the epicenter and contributing almost more than 99% of the cases so far. And we were really encouraged by what we have seen on the ground. One, the government was coordinating, and it had already instructed its cabinet to focus on this. Partners are coordinated. Community committees are triggered. And community health agents are visiting house to house, village to village. They call them RECO. And we have a mobile lab on the ground in Bikoro. Some cases have been already isolated, around 11 of them in Bikoro Hospital, the hospital that we visited. Not only that, they have also identified contacts, more than 500, around 530, I think, as we speak. And this will help us, one, for case management, and second, for the vaccination that we are planning to start on Sunday. The challenging part of this is, one, as I said earlier, the urban case, since Mbandaka is linked with Kinshasa and Brazzaville by Congo River. And the second, the other challenge is the remote areas, like the area we visited. We had to travel there by helicopter, and we have to establish an air bridge, which will be a very costly exercise. But we were really encouraged by what we have seen, despite the challenges that we have already seen, because there is strong coordination, both government and partners, and I would like actually to use this opportunity to thank MSF, World Food Programme, UNICEF, Red Cross, and other partners, but above all, the communities were already doing a lot to respond swiftly to the Ebola outbreak. Something I will share with you, something that touched me when we were there with Pete and the regional director, Dr. Sidi. The health professionals we met in Bikoro were worried about us. They thought we would catch Ebola, and they didn't expect that we would be there. Then one thing we said to them is, you shouldn't worry about our life because you're here every single day and you're in the front line. And this is actually a very important moment for us to understand firsthand the problems on the ground. And to be with you is actually something that we should do, which should be a must. But we were really moved and touched because they were not caring about their life. They were caring about our life. We were going to stay there for a few hours. That mattered to them more than their own life, which is on the line. Anyway, I think being with our really troops or soldiers who are fighting day and night on the front line was an honor for us, for myself, for Pete, my colleague, and CD. And that we can see is increasing the inspiration and motivation of our staff, but also mobilizing global support. And we have requested 26 million support to respond to this outbreak. And we have already secured 8.8 million. And we believe that the funding that we have already planned will be secured, considering the response that we are getting. And that visit actually had helped to motivate our staff. Although it was risky, we have to also share the risk. But at the same time, it mobilized also the national support. And thank you for your interest. Thank you for being with us today. And with that, I would like to pass on the, the floor to the chair of the emergency committee, Professor Robert Stefano, who have joined us, him and his colleagues, at a very short notice to deliberate and discuss on whether we should give the current situation the highest grade, which is fake, or not. Of course, this is an expert opinion, which I was really happy that I seen commitment from him and his colleagues, but it's better if you hear it from the horse's mouth, and I pass the floor to him. Thank you.
Thank you so much, DG, and let me quickly...
Microphone.
Now it's on. Okay, let me quickly look back first. On 8 May, that is just only 10 days ago, WHO was notified by the Ministry of Health of the Democratic Republic of Congo that two lab-confirmed cases of Ebola virus disease had occurred in the Bikoro Health Zone, which was mentioned by Dr. Tedros just a few minutes ago. That is in the Equateur province of the country, just next to Congo River. Cases have now also been found in nearby Iboko and Mbandaka, and from 4 April retrospectively to 17 May, that is yesterday, 45 Ebola virus disease cases have been reported, including 3 in healthcare personnel. 25 deaths have been reported. Among these 45 cases, 14 have been confirmed. Most of these cases have been in the very remote area of Bikoro, although one confirmed case is in Mbandaka, a city of 1.2 million, and that has, of course, implications with respect to its spread. 9 neighboring countries, including particularly Congo Brazzaville and the Central African Republic, have been advised that they are at risk of the disease being spread across borders, and they have been supported with equipment and personnel. So much for the background when our committee assumed its work this noon. Now, I'll give you the most important decision right away. It was the view of the committee that the conditions for a public health emergency of international concern have not been met. Of course, as was alluded to, there are key challenges in this situation. The one is the risk of more rapid spread is given that Ebola that there have been a few cases detected in the urban area which I have just mentioned. And the risk of international spread is particularly great because the city of Mbandaka is in proximity of the Congo River, and that Congo River in today's newspaper I just read has been labeled as a highway, and that it is, you can travel on it to Kinshasa and across the border to Congo-Brazzaville. And that, of course, has a significant regional traffic across very porous borders there. There are several larger outbreaks in remote and hard-to-reach areas. And there are huge logistical challenges given the poor infrastructure and the remote location. And these factors affect surveillance, case detection and confirmation, also contact tracing and access to therapeutics. And as mentioned before, healthcare staff have been infected, which may be a risk for further amplification. So much for the bad news. However, the committee also noted the following. Given the outbreak was only confirmed 10 days ago, as I have underlined, the immediate response by the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo, of WHO and other partners, including enhancing surveillance, establishing case management facilities, deploying mobile laboratories, engaging community leaders, setting up an air bridge, etc., provides a strong reason to believe that this situation can be brought under control. In addition, the advanced preparations for use of the investigational vaccine provide further cause for some optimism for control. But additionally to that decision not to declare a public health emergency of international concern, the emergency committee advised the Director General that the Democratic Republic of Congo government, WHO, and partners should remain engaged in vigorous response, because without that, the situation is likely to deteriorate significantly. Safety and security of responders in the field must be assured in all time. This response should be supported by the entire international community. Global solidarity among the scientific community is critical, and international data should be shared freely and regularly. It is particularly important that there should be no international travel or trade restrictions. Exit screening has already been started, including at Kinshasa Airport, but it should be implemented also on other airports in that country, particularly Mbandaka, and on the ports on the Congo River. And there the situation is a bit tricky because there is quite a number, several dozens of little ports on that river. And that is to be considered of great importance. In contrast, entry screening, particularly in distant airports on other continents, is not really of any public health value and not cost beneficial. Neighboring countries should strengthen preparedness and surveillance. And then there should be robust risk communication with real-time data social mobilization, community engagement, and that is needed so that those affected understand what protection measures are being recommended. Lastly, if the outbreak expands significantly, or if there is international spread, the emergency committee will be reconvened and will reconsider its fundamental decision. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe, Pete, if you would like to say a few words. Yeah?
We will take questions.
Okay, so then to the MC. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Robert Stephen. Welcome to our journalists who are outside this room and our followers on social media. If you want to ask a question, please dial 01 on your keypad to be added to the queue. We will take a few questions from the room. Please state the media you are working for. Stéphane?
Stéphane Bissard, Le Temps newspaper. Last Friday, you were basically saying that it was a very big challenge to tackle Ebola in poor urban area. And now Bandaka has been affected by one case. How do you see that? Because obviously it was a challenge last Friday. Today you raise optimism. How do you look on that? Thank you.
We will take a second question. Yannick?
Hello, this is Yannick from German TV ARD. Dr. Tedros, could you explain how dangerous do you see the situation in DRC, especially when we talk about the functionality of the vaccine? Thank you.
Jamil?
Yeah, my question is if you could give us like your idea about how dangerous the situation in DRC is now, especially when we speak about the functionality of the vaccines. The vaccination, the life, if it effectiveness. Sorry, thanks.
Jamil,
can I ask something not related to Ebola, or should we wait?
Okay. Later on, Jamil, please. Ebola first, maybe.
No.
Mr. Tedros, a question not related to Ebola then. Why is it that you keep silent related to Venezuela? Is it because they were the leaders of the non-aligned movement that supported your election by any chance? Thank you.
Who wants to? Dr. Robert maybe can answer on Ebola?
Yeah, you can, please.
Yeah. Okay, the question was about that single case in Mdaka. As you may be aware of the fact, there have been also three other cases in the city. However, these were imported from the rural areas. These were three family members who had attended a funeral, and so there the situation is pretty clear. Now, this additional case, there the situation is not yet completely clear. However, I'm aware of the fact that the contacts of those cases in Mdaka, because that's more accessible as compared to the rural areas, they have been contacted, and so there is a close follow-up, and so we do not rate that single case as extremely serious anymore, or I haven't been here last Friday, so I can't comment on what has been said then. Satisfied?
Yeah, maybe to start from there, when the committee recommended what they recommended, they have seen the totality of the situation, not just the one case in Bandaka. And at the same time, they said the situation still is a concern and that they would be happy to come back and deliberate and see if, based on the changing situation if they have another recommendation. On vaccines, the situation, I think, was already provided by the chair, 45 cases so far, 25 deaths, and of course around 14 confirmed cases so far. The 11 cases that were confirmed were actually during the last 24 hours, and these were from the suspected cases. This is from retrospective. Means we're already building the lab capacity at local level, and we will continue to do that. So from the suspected cases, we will see how many of them are actually confirmed cases. On the effectiveness of the vaccine, it was found previously, by the way, to be safe and at the same time also efficacious. And this is a vaccine that we believe can help us as part of the response. But we will not just rely on the vaccine. We're already in partnership with MSF. We will do the case management. But as I said earlier, we will do the basics also, the prevention of infection and control, because that's very important. So please take the vaccine as one of the parts of the comprehensive response. And we will not just rely on vaccines, but we will rely on a range of prevention and curative responses to the outbreak. On Venezuela, it's a news for me if they had supported me. I mean, as a bloc, Nam, you said. But it doesn't matter whether they supported me or not. Everything that we do should be based on principles. I have no obligation to give something to those who have supported me. And I want you to really take that into account. But on Venezuela, this is the first time actually I'm getting a question about Venezuela, and I would like to assure you that we're working very closely through PAHO WHO. As you know, the country is facing difficulties, economic and political. The inflation, as you know, is very high, and that affects the costs of medicine. And there is a shortage of medicine and supplies in the country. And not only that, we have outbreak of malaria, measles, and diphtheria. And to address these two problems, one, through the pooled funding of PAHO WHO, we're already providing support to Venezuela and working with the Ministry of Health to help them address the shortage of medical and shortage of medical supplies. And we're also working with them to boost the regular vaccination program, but at the same time, campaigns or vaccination campaigns to address especially diphtheria and measles. So we're working together and we're making progress also, especially on the immunization and control of the outbreaks. But not only with Venezuela, we're working also with Colombia, Brazil, and Guyana, because there is already migration to some Venezuelans are already migrating to the three countries. And as you know, the outbreak in Venezuela could spread to the three countries. So we're working with Venezuela, with not only Venezuela, but with Brazil, Colombia, and Guyana, as I said earlier. We're already working with on Venezuela, and if there is anything additional information that you want, we would be happy to provide that.
Actually, just to make it clear, I have been asking for this information for the last couple, months, during the press briefings, and the information was that this was only Paho that should be given this information. That's why I'm saying. But if you tell your people that they should give us information in a regular basis, that would be very helpful.
Obrigado. Will do. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Tedros. We will be taking two questions from journalists outside this room. First with Helen Branswell from Reuters and Joseph from The Guardian. Helen? Helen? No, it's Helen's that.
At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300 have gone. How many
Helen?
More are going? Yes, can you hear me?
Helen?
Can you hear me? At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300 have gone. How many
Helen?
More are going? Yes, can you hear me?
Helen?
Can you hear me? At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300 have gone. How many
Helen?
More are going? Yes, can you hear me?
Helen?
Can you hear me? At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300
Helen?
Have gone. How many
Helen?
More are going? Yes,
Helen, sorry, the line
Helen?
Is very bad.
At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300 have gone. How many
Helen?
More are going?
Helen, sorry, the line
Helen?
Is very bad.
At this point, to DRC, I know 4,300
yeah.
gone.
Helen, we cannot hear you now.
Helen, sorry, the line
Helen?
Is very bad.
We'll take some
DRC,
questions
know,
from the room.
Helen,
Helen,
gone.
Helen, oh. Helen we cannot hear you now.
Helen, sorry,
thanks very much. Tom Miles from Reuters. I think the lady you're trying to speak to is not from Reuters, but I'm from Reuters. In your view, how long have you got to bring this Ebola epidemic under control before you've missed your best chance? And can you tell us, maybe one for Dr. Salama, how many contacts have gone missing? And are you planning to ask the government to let you use ZMapp or other treatments? Thanks very much.
Another question? Catherine?
Catherine Fiancan for France 24 and Chinese television CGTN. I'd like to know what kind of cooperation you've prepared with the neighboring countries. As you've said, the Congo River is a real highway, not only going through Congo, but also being a highway of trade between Congo, Brazzaville, and Angola. So do you have contacts with the authorities of these two countries, and how do you intend to help them, knowing that the regions have no electricity and no running water?
Hi, it's Elizabeth Isakova from Russian news agency RIA Novosti. Dr. Tedros, I wanted to ask you, like several weeks ago you promised to the Russian ambassador here that you will dispatch a mission to Syrian Duma to assess the health situation there after the alleged chemical attack on the ground. So I wanted to know what was the outcome of this mission and have they reached Duma? Thanks.
Start on the Ebola questions. So Tom, on the time frame, we don't have a fixed time frame to stop outbreaks, because every outbreak is different, every outbreak of Ebola is different. So there's no fixed time frame. But to give you a sense of our planning time frame, the first response plan covers 3 months. So we're really looking at what gains we can make over the next 3 months, remembering the logistic challenges that Dr. Tedros and Dr. Stefan spoke about earlier. In terms of gone missing, I wouldn't classify yet gone missing because we're just identifying all the cases and contacts. But just to give you a sense of the effectiveness of the contact tracing, it's extremely high in Bandaka. It is very high in Bikoro, And where we're having most challenges in terms of identifying contacts is in some of the small, very peripheral villages like Ikobo. And the reason for that is it's very hard to reach them. So we have been able to reach by helicopter Bikoro. We haven't yet been able to clear the landing strips in Ikobo. So the only way we've been able to get there is by motorcycle, and it's literally hours through the dirt tracks to get there. So Ikobo is still facing a challenge, but we also anticipate that because there's the least number of cases there, there, of course, will be the least number of contacts. So overall, we're tracing more than 532 contacts across all of the sites for the response. High overall identification, but some gaps, particularly in the most hardest to access areas. In terms of the cooperation with surrounding countries, so really from the first days of the confirmation on the May the 8th, we've put on alert the 9 surrounding countries. They've been ranked in order of priority. Of course, the highest priority are the immediate neighbors, Congo-Brazzaville, Central African Republic, and Angola, particularly because, as you mentioned, the rivers connect these surrounding countries. We've also reached out to the governments and through the WHO offices in all those countries, begun to strengthen the preparedness plans, begun to make available supplies such as personal protective equipment, and strengthening the surveillance system. So as we speak, for example, we have a team that's on the border between Congo-Brazzaville, the Republic of Congo, and DRC, really strengthening the cross-border relationship on exit screening. So on the question of access to Douma, indeed, we had planned to send a mission to Douma, and we had offered. We're still waiting for the final responses from the Syrian government. At this stage, they haven't given us the go-ahead to go into Douma and follow up on the public health consequences of that reported event.
Okay. Shall I?
Sorry, I had a question about ZMAP and other treatments as well.
Sorry, I neglected to answer your final question, Tom. So indeed, part of our response now in all major outbreaks is looking at the research agenda and the agenda for products that may be investigational but have proven to be safe and effective. And that's really the auspices under which we're using the Ebola vaccine, which is also an investigational product but has proven safe and effective. And by the way, the Ebola vaccine has arrived in Kinshasa on Wednesday, 4,000 doses. The second tranche is arriving today, and we'll be able to commence vaccination as early as Monday of next week. In relation to therapeutics, though, it's a very good question. And part of the change in the response to Ebola has been this. In the past, our major objective was containment. We had very little else to offer communities in terms of concrete support on protection through technologies or in terms of treatment. And really, one of the paradigm shifts we're seeking to make in this response is to offer communities a lot more. And so vaccine is part of that, but therapeutics is also part of it. We have an advisory committee set up that's advising us on the therapeutic side, and indeed they're particularly interested in the option of ZMAP. And so we're discussing at the moment with the government whether they'll approve the use of ZMAP in the therapeutic centres. We believe it's likely to happen in the coming days. One of the challenges, of course, though, with these products, including monoclonal antibodies such as ZMAP, is they're complex to implement. So ZMAP, as you know, is infusion, takes several hours. Dr. Tedros and I were in Bikoro, and honestly speaking, it's very hard to imagine today without a lot of support that the facilities in Bikoro will be able to introduce intravenous infusions, which require a lot of monitoring immediately. They'll need a lot of support to deal with that sort of sophisticated therapeutics.
Okay. Maybe I would like to say a few words on the timing. How long would it take? What we're really sure about is we would like to fight hard and fight well. At all levels, especially that's I think what I would like to stress, headquarters, region and country office, and with all partners. I think that will really help. And on contacts, I don't expect to miss contacts. It will depend on how we communicate with them, because there is incentive now. In the past, they used to say, contacts, what for? Okay, to quarantine me or to isolate me. But this time, we're saying we will have ring vaccination and we will vaccinate health professionals, contacts, and contacts of contacts. So there is incentive in it. So it will depend on how well we communicate at the community and other levels. Otherwise, we expect that we will not miss much contacts. On neighboring countries, one more information. As you know, we will be starting our assembly next week. So we have already decided to meet here as a group. All 9 countries, neighbors of DRC, and also WHO and other partners, and discuss on how we can move together. The assembly is really creating a good opportunity, so we will use that to harmonize our efforts. Thank you.
Okay, I would like to apologize for our journalists outside this room. The technical system is not working, it's not reliable, but we will send the audio file straight away after this press conference and the transcript of this press conference, and we will respond to questions from them. We will take 2 or 3 other questions. Laurent?
Laurent Sirot, Swiss News Agency. Last time you came in front of us 2 months ago, you were calling the state members for armies of sanitary soldiers of reserve that could be mobilized quite swiftly and rapidly. And that would be particularly useful in that context of Ebola. So I wanted to know, where do you stand in that regard? Have you got some commitments from member states? And maybe have you got some proactive proposal from states to send people to tackle that outbreak of Ebola?
Thank you, Laurent. Another question? Yes, Nick?
Nick Cummings, New York Times. It doesn't sound as if you've got an awful lot of people to vaccinate at this point. You've got 500 odd cases that you've traced. You've got a few hundred frontline health workers. I mean, how extensive is the vaccination, the ring fencing vaccination, going to be? How long do you think it will take to implement that on the current caseload? And secondly, you're calling for international cooperation. Could you just sum up a little bit the financial resources that you are receiving from the international community at this stage to support this operation?
Bit, you want to take some of it?
So let me start with you, New York Times. So the vaccination program is conducted through ring vaccination. And basically, you start with the confirmation of a case. You take all of the contacts of that case, and then you go in concentric circles. So beyond the contacts, then you find the contacts of the contacts. So even if you have a small number of cases, when you start doing all of those rings, you end up with quite large numbers. So for example, we're planning on around 150 contacts and contacts of contacts for every case. So when you add that up, it already becomes in the range of 8,000 to 10,000 people that we'll be looking at vaccinating in the first phase. Of course, as the epidemic grows, which it may, the numbers will also increase. Because of the confirmation of the case in Bandaka, that's changed the priorities immediately. Because it's an urban center, it means we have to start in Bandaka. So we will be starting firstly with healthcare workers in Bandaka and then the broader ring vaccination program. The first planning figures, as I said, 8,000 to 10,000, and then we go from there. Bandaka itself, we can, if we've got very good contact tracing and depending on the geographical spread of the contacts, we can do it in a matter of days to 1 or 2 weeks. But it depends on that geographical spread and remembering that we're going to have to track these patients down or these contacts down by motorcycle and sometimes going over for hours of driving for hours to reach them. In terms of the financial situation, so our appeal, the strategic response plan, which is a combined appeal of government, WHO, and all major partners, is for $26 million over 3 months. We have currently pledges or firm commitments for around $9 million of that $26 million. So we're $17 million short. And I would use the opportunity to say that that may sound like a considerable sum of money, but let's remember that the Ebola West Africa outbreak 2 years ago cost the international community between $3 and $4 billion. So this is a relatively small investment if we can stamp out this outbreak now for a major gain in terms of lives saved, most importantly, but also in terms of dollars saved. In terms of the other questions, maybe just let me touch upon the mobilization of emergency workforce for the Ebola response. So already we've put on alert the major partners that we have. One of them is the Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network. That's already deployed thousands of people through WHO over the last few years. And it's beginning to deploy very large numbers of epidemiologists, logisticians, Ebola experts, clinicians through WHO into DRC. Our own staffing is going to amount to more than 100 responders by the weekend. And we've also asked the Emergency Medical Team Partnership to be mobilized. So that's more clinically orientated teams from all around the world that are prepared to come in and assist with infection prevention and control and clinical care. And we have a number of offers already on the table from surrounding countries and from the international community to respond to the clinical care needs, including most recently, after Dr. Tedros discussed with the European Commission from European countries. But Dr. Tedros may want to add.
Oh, working. Yeah. So one of the initiatives we're starting is the Global Health Emergency Corps, as you rightly said. And there are some elements which are similar to this, which we need to build on. But I have already asked all the heads of states and governments to commit. Then we hope to get their responses soon. But while going for that large-scale commitment from member states for this particular outbreak, the US, specifically CDC, is already providing health professionals. UK is providing emergency medical teams, and European Union also, as Pete said. So these are going to cover all the expenses, not only providing the personnel. And it's just the same model, but it will be large scale, and tens of thousands will be ready in case there is a huge a need for a big response. Then on financial resources, I think on financial resources, as Pete said, 26 million is not big. That's what we are asking. You can save lives by investing this small amount now. But the response is very encouraging. Immediately after we came back from Bikoro, from the field, we have reached out to as many partners as possible, and we're continuing to discuss with them, briefing them on the situation and asking for their support. And in a few days, we came back on Monday, we have already mobilized around $8 million. And there is still, we haven't included the other funding we may get, which are on the pipeline. But I think the response is very positive. Resources that we need, I think the key thing is not just the funding only, but we can see also the political mobilization, to be honest. You can see a consensus saying what happened in 2014 should not happen. That commitment will mobilize resources, and that's what we want. It's intangible. You don't really touch it. But we can see a consensus building, and we would like to really continue to push that way, to have a global consensus on how important solidarity is at an early stage, instead of late, but to do it as early as possible and respond as swiftly as possible. And we can see that. And some of them are even coming to us, asking for, you know, how can we help? So this is a very good development. And not only the resources, my point is, let's focus on the movement also, on the mobilization. We have to create a movement, and that's what we're seeing now. And we're very much encouraged by that.
Thank you, Dr. Tedros. I think with that, we will conclude this press conference. Thank you.